My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Now, the World Health Organization defines mental health as a state of well-being in which an individual is able to cope with the normal stresses of everyday life and essentially are able to function as productive members of their community. Health experts say that mental health is important at every stage of one's life, starting all the way from when we are kids to adolescence to adulthood. The World Health Organization says that depression is one of the most common mental illnesses, and it affects over 300 million people worldwide, causing all kinds of disability and even death. However, despite such grave concerns by the WHO and other global health and policy organizations, research shows that in Africa, mental health is not taken as a serious health challenge and as such is not prioritized by our healthcare professionals and policy makers. And there are many reasons that explain this, including the obvious one, a lack of resources. See, healthcare systems across the continent are overwhelmed by other health challenges, including infectious diseases and other non-communicable diseases. And this leaves very little, if any, resources to be allocated to mental health. But the most important reason, I believe, which is partly the reason why we are having this conversation today on Upfront, is the ignorance and stigma towards mental illness. This stigma is most cases influenced by traditional beliefs in many African societies about the causes of mental health. It is also these misguided beliefs and prejudices that account for this reluctance by our communities to address this very important issue. So on the show today, we want to take a look on how mental health is addressed in Africa, especially when it comes to youth on the continent. We will also take a look at the Black diaspora at large, those living outside the continent. How do they address mental health challenges in their communities? But first, let's listen to this report about mental health by my colleague Lisa Schlein.
WHO Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Program Manager Tarun Dua says people with mental illness suffer from stigma and are victims of human rights violations because of their condition. She tells VOA too much emphasis is placed on institutional care for the mentally ill. She says governments must put their effort and money into strengthening community-based services.
And for two reasons. One, as you mentioned, the services in community are more cost-effective. Two, this is what people with mental health conditions want. Services that are closer to them rather than services that are in institutions. Third, the services, when they are provided in institutions, we know that the human rights can be violated.
The World Health Organization reports governments in low- and middle-income countries spend less than $1 per capita on mental health, compared with high-income countries that spend more than $80. It says most of this money goes to mental hospitals, which serve a small proportion of those in need of care. WHO says investing in mental health makes good health and good economic sense. For example, it notes every dollar invested in treating depression and anxiety leads to a return of $4 in better health and productivity. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
My thanks to my colleague, Lisa Schlein. If you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. We are talking about mental health on the show today, where studies show that across the continent, the majority of people who suffer from mental illness do not have access or have little access to mental health care if they need it. And as we start off our conversation, let's listen to some of your opinions.
My name is Nachitende Irene Kakonge, and I'm a graduate from Makerere University of Social Work and Social Administration. People don't talk about mental health issues in the community. Most times parents are shy to talk about it, but they think that maybe their child is cursed. You know, there are those beliefs that they are attached to it. Not knowing, it's just health, like a sickness, like how someone can acquire malaria and how and it can heal. So most parents, because of the shame and fear of what the society might say about their families, they tend to hide these children away or just name them names like Zolo, Kasidu, and they never really take that level to go and look out for social workers or for treatment to help the person or the child. So the treatment is there, but it's not very adequate because it's from both sides. You have to give support to the mental health patient as a family, but most families don't.
I am Agustino Deng Aliel. I am the executive director of South Sudan Youth for Peace and Development Organization. It's a youth-led organization. When you talk of mental health in South Sudan, maybe basically in our communities, it is not always spoken, and to me, I see there are no treatment or facilities already made for treatment. In South Sudan, for them, there is a belief that when somebody is having mental health, he's somebody who is already mad, he's supposed to be not part of the society.
I'm called Nyeko Martin, a resident of Gulu. The way people perceive all these things in here, in this region where we are, especially Gulu in particular, mental problems are arising out of the trauma that people got during the war, and also of the HIV and AIDS, this disease that is really affecting so many people here. This resulting into a mental problem where somebody grows up and really thinks, you know, for me, I can't have this AIDS. And when the person realizes that he or she is having AIDS, the person fears to go and test. And there's a lot of things that is going on in this person's mind. The person says, probably my life is now ended here. The person starts doing things that is abnormal. I would say the facilities that we have are really not enough, because the only hospital that offers mental problem here that caters for people with mental disabilities, I would say it's the main hospital. Everybody who is having a health problem goes in there.
Thanks to all of you for contributing your opinions on the show today. As you have heard, much of what we know about mental health and the attitude towards people with mental illnesses are influenced very much by our traditional beliefs, and it's the same traditional beliefs that often determine how we respond to those experiencing mental health problems, especially people with depression. My co-host Josephine Muthengi is in Nairobi, Kenya. She joins me on the line to talk to us about why these negative attitudes towards people with mental health issues persist in our communities.
If you are raised by African parents or in an African household, I think we all kind of went through the same thing of being told that life is tough.
Right.
You know,
right.
Toughen up.
Right.
You know, and anything other than that was just like, that's just weakness. You need to get tougher. Our parents' generation never understood the whole idea of what mental health even was.
Right.
And so we grew up with that lack of understanding, and I think it's affected us quite a bit growing up. I think it's just African culture. Like, I was speaking to some older folks that are from my village, and you know, I was talking to them about this and trying to get an understanding of why it's not talked about or why people are shunned if, you know, they end up going crazy and things like that. And there's this whole mentality of like the witchcraft thing, you know, people
right.
think it's sorcery, and that's how they were raised to understand it. I've heard stories of people being shunned by their families, you know, when
absolutely
they,
I know many people too
so yeah. bad, they just get locked up in a room.
The ignorance is generational.
Do you see people starting to talk about it though, like your generation? Is there a change
in
attitudes?
You know, just in terms of, the way technology has connected us with people from all over the world, that we're able to understand things on a different level. It's not just what our parents taught us. And we're able to do our own research and say, okay, maybe this is abnormal, you know, and connect with other people from other parts of the world where it's not so stigmatized for them. And so I think people are starting to talk about it. There's a website that I found here in Kenya called bonga.or.ke, and it's just a platform for people to go and share their stories about whatever issues that they're dealing with, but it's an anonymous website. So you go and say, these are my issues. They're hoping to get some licensed professionals on there so that, you know, we can get counseling and that type of thing. And this was a young person initiative. It's just some young guys who decided, we're not talking, and we're, you know, sort of suffering in silence. So it's there's positivity associated with it.
Right. But that's just limited to, say, to young, you know, kids in the cities who have access to the internet. But it has not yet proliferated, I guess, to the rural areas.
Yeah, the villages, that's a whole other issue, because, like, when you look at what the options are for help, you know, for people even in the villages. Like the only government, I think, mental hospital in Kenya particularly, is really just run to the ground. There's overcrowding, the conditions are terrible. It's called Mathare. Mm. And it's one of those places where if you end up there, you're probably going to die there.
Mm.
You're probably going to, you know, spend the rest of your life there and just be treated terribly. So if you're looking at it as that's the only option, people feel like I'd rather keep my relative in my house where I can see them.
Right.
And even take them to this one government hospital where I know they're just going to go and be mistreated.
Right.
So also the options for treatment.
Do you see a greater dialogue happening in within the, you know, policy circles in Nairobi, in Kenya, where let's say the Ministry of Health is starting to...
Every couple of years, you know, the government will come and say, yeah, we're looking into this and we're trying to provide more psychiatrists and psychologists in this hospital. And, you know, but it'll have to be, you know, an uproar where somebody had such a terrible experience with a family member there.
Mm.
And if they cause enough outrage, then someone from the government will come out and speak. But I don't think that there's actual really improvement in that regard.
Mm.
There are private sort of clinics and hospitals that have opened up. But of course, when you look at the expense of that, that's
right.
not you know, available to everybody as
right.
an option.
So the only people who can access that type of treatment.
Cities again, and people who have means. In terms of what is available to the public, I don't think that's changed much over the years.
Is it possible to self-diagnose if you're having some of these problems?
Yeah, I think that's difficult, and I don't think it's wise to do that because a lot of people don't understand the line between I had a bad day or I've been feeling sad because of 1, 2, 3, because I'm unemployed or whatever, and I am now clinically depressed. I think that's for a health professional to assess. Because if we all just say, because I'm sad, I'm depressed, and you know, then what we don't know your options for treatment. You don't know what types of therapies are available, what types of medication is available, what, you know, what suits your individual situation. So I think it's important to get at least that initial diagnosis so you understand where some of your problems seem to have been stemming from. I think it's important to start conversations. I think it's important to connect each other with different resources that are available out there so people know their options. So you can connect with me on Twitter. My handle is Joey, J-O-E-Y _Mutengi on Twitter, and on Instagram at Joey Mutengi. So send me a message. Let's talk about this. And I think we need to come out of the dark ages of saying that mental health importance or mental illness is not a real disease. And I think, you know, in the next generations to come, hopefully, we'll be raising our children to understand that.
Absolutely. That's a great message. Thank you, Joey.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's Josephine Mutengi, one of my co-hosts here on Upfront. We want to welcome Joey back to Upfront after almost 10 years since she last appeared on the show as an intern, if you remember. Like Josephine said, there are these negative attitudes about people with mental health problems, with depression, stress, and many other of these mental health challenges. And this is the reason why many of these people who have these problems are not open to acknowledging that they do have a problem in the first place. So the question is, how do we change that? Well, it starts by having conversations such as this, whether on radio or other platforms, where people are able to openly talk about mental health. And one of the people driving a conversation around mental health in his community is Nathan Araya, an Ethiopian-American filmmaker. He's based in Texas. Ned says that when he was growing up, his family and his community, by extension, did not talk about mental health. And that if you're dealing with worry or stress or anxiety and depression, you most likely would not seek mental health care.
So I'm a first-generation Ethiopian-American. My mom and dad, you know, are immigrants. They came to this country seeking education and opportunity. And then at 10 years old, my dad left, and then I was raised with a single mom. So mm-hmm. I'm the oldest of three boys. So, you know, I grew up in a household where, you know, we didn't have much, but we had each other. And my
You had family.
I had family.
Right.
I had family. And, you know, I was raised, you know, just to kind of, you know, be very, you know, ambitious mm-hmm. and to really go the extra mile in everything I do. Is, again, as a minority, you have to kind of work twice as hard to just get on the same level,
right.
you know? So I just kind of grew up with that type of mindset and the love and the nurturement from my mom and my brothers. They're fully supportive.
And part of what you're seeking to do with your documentary series, Growing Up
in America is to tell your unique story.
Right.
Let's talk about the episodes, the episode especially the one that deals with mental health. Why did you decide to go that route as one of your first episodes?
Yeah, so personally for me, you know, this year has been a kind of a stressful year. 2018 was great, let me just say that. But there was, it came with its own stresses. And, you know, I handle so many projects. I'm doing so many things as an entrepreneur. So one morning I woke up and I had these chest pains. And I didn't know what it was. It was kind of very foreign to me. Never experienced anything like this. So I talked to the doctor and said, you need to come to the hospital. Because I told him it was on this side of the chest, which is where the heart is. So I went into the hospital, got it checked up. They did a full body. And they said, you're perfectly healthy. Everything is great with you. And I said, where are these chest pains coming from? They said, it's an inflammation of the chest muscle and it's caused by common stress. I was like, interesting, common stress. I've never dealt with common stress.
So stress manifests itself physically. With pain in your chest.
It did.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it did. So, you know, that was a big realization for me, saying that, whoa, I need to slow down. And I asked the doctor what I needed to do in order to help myself. Mm-hmm. He said, honestly, you just need a rest. And that was a big realization for me, like, wow, mental health care, self-care is so important. You know, we can go off in life and do so many things, but if we're not mentally, physically, emotionally healthy, you know, what good is it? So health, you know, I've been a big advocate for health throughout the year. And then within my own community, my family members, I've noticed that they're dealing with so many different things that are related to mental health care, whether it's anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, especially from the immigrant communities and refugees that are coming into America. You know, they're escaping war and certain issues that are coming from their country.
Right, they come with that trauma.
They come in with that trauma, and they're adjusting and adapting to American culture, and they don't know how to articulate or navigate, you know, what they're dealing with. They just suppress it. Yeah, we're all dealing with stuff, Jackson. That's the thing. Like, we're all dealing with stuff. And for me, you know, I want to cut the silos. Mm. And there's no reason why people need to struggle in silence. Mm. We need to end the silence. So what was interesting, that every character in this film, every person that I asked to come and be a part of it, they're talented, they're skillful, they're successful, but they deal with their own internal issues
Absolutely.
As well. So this was a form of healing for them, as it was for many that are coming across.
This was an outlet for them.
This is an outlet.
But also, mostly importantly, that we get to see that, and a young person who sees and adores and respects these people sees successful individuals also going through some type of issues.
Right.
And they can kind of relate.
Right, yeah.
So what exactly do they go through? What are some of the things?
So,
what were the common threads among their struggles?
So what we're seeing within, like, mental health, especially with people within this film, one of the people mentioned in the film that they grew up with the idea of mental health being a wide spectrum. And so, for example, on one end, if you're dealing with schizophrenia or hearing voices, yes, that's acceptable for mental health. But if you're dealing with depression, anxiety, you know, that's unheard of. You know, we're always told just, you know, keep pushing, think positive, you'll be great.
Right, mostly if you come from an African home.
Yeah, or prayer. And there's nothing wrong with prayer,
right.
But there are ways you can be able to kind of facilitate healing for yourself, right? So I wanted to understand that, hey, how do we provide people with this information, education, so they can make healthy and well-educated choices for themselves.
And how to heal.
And how
to start the process of healing.
Yeah, and how to start the process
of healing. Did you ever have conversations about mental health in your home growing up?
What? Man, I got physical beatings. I don't know about mental health, man. That's the African household, man. Like we don't know about mental health.
Yeah.
No, but you know what's funny? Like, I was never exposed to it. And that's the reason why I wanted to, you know, create this film and this event series project. Mm. Because it's important that we're aware of things that we have access to, like therapy, counseling.
There's resources that are right at our fingertips, so we don't even know.
They're right there. So that's the first step. Like, you know, we may not be able to fix every problem, but we can face it. And by facing it, meaning that we have to be self-aware about what we're dealing with and admit that we have an issue.
And knowledge is very important. Information is very important.
Right.
Yes.
Through education. Yeah. And then we reach out for help. So there's so many resources available, and I want people to be well educated to figure out what's best for them.
Do you see people growing up in America, first generation Americans like yourself, having unique mental or stress related issues that are just unique to you guys?
Yeah, very. Let's look at this. Immigrants versus first generation experience. The immigrant community. I was just talking to a mother in Denver. I spent some time with a good friend and hung out with her. I was explaining the immigrant experience, they're survivors. they are strong. They plow through life. They work at a company 40 years, and they're for their kids, for their future, for the hope. First generation, we received all of these the opportunities, but we're struggling with what to do with it right now because we're pioneering. We're trying to figure life out. And the first generation, we're not as focused on security as we are on fulfillment. Very different spectrums. Immigrant experience is all about security. They work, they plow through life, they made it. They are their own species. I can't even, you know.
Right. It was about survival.
It was about survival, right? So it's about survival, security. With the first generation experience is about fulfillment, inner peace.
Right.
And so you can be
joy, happiness,
right. meaning of life. That's what is really transformational and healing or fulfilling for this for this generation.
Right.
So for people like myself, like I rather take a risk in life and be able to kind of risk things in order to do something meaningful and fulfilling to me. I can't just operate in a place where I'm just not fulfilled.
Absolutely. You know? So then how do you have conversations, for example, with members of your wider community that are not necessarily first generation, that are part of the immigrant community that are still struggling with some of their traumas, they're still struggling with their mental stress, their stresses of survival.
And
maybe give them, because they need this knowledge and this information as much as you do.
Right.
And they also, so how do you start that conversation with them?
You start with this. So at our last event, Dr. Brandon Watis, who's a psychologist in the military, good personal friend of mine, married to my cousin, said something very interesting on a panel discussion that we did. He said, trauma is experienced individually, but healed within community.
That's powerful.
When he said that, you know, I was just blown away. I was like, wow, there are so many silos. There's so many people dealing with these silent struggles. So the first thing that we need to be able to do is admit that we are struggling.
Right.
And part of me as a filmmaker, storyteller, is to be vulnerable and to be authentic and to be able to kind of step out on the ledge and be able to say, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what I'm experiencing within my community. And this is how we need to heal. So healing comes and is a process, and it comes in many different ways. So our goal is to be able to open up, you know, share stories so that people don't feel like they're alone, and then be able to understand that, hey, there are resources and things that can be able to help you navigate your mental health. So that's the idea. Break the silo.
So where are you going with this with the episode? What are you hoping to achieve with it?
Yeah, so this started as an episode, and we're gonna get into many different topical episodes. But with this first episode, what I want to do is, and I'm already doing it, I'm doing an event series tour called State of Mind. So what this
in the U.S.
In the U.S., right. Yeah, in the U.S. So we started in Austin. We partnered with the mayor of Austin, Mayor Steve Adler, who was super helpful in contributing, you know, from the city. So he did amazing just coming and speaking. And then we had local researchers and therapists of color to lead panel discussions. And then we opened up for a town hall discussion. Now, with that, we provide resources. So we gave away a 1 hour free therapy session. We gave away 30 free minute consultations with licensed therapists and counselors. And then we gave handouts for people so that they understand where they can find help. The cost has always been a big issue, you know, in order to manage that. So we found lower cost therapy sessions that people can find online and on certain websites and organizations. So the goal for this event series is to minimize the barriers that exist between underrepresented communities and healthcare providers and systems.
And the resources that are available to them.
That's the goal.
Absolutely. You know?
That was Nathan Araya, a filmmaker and storyteller based in Texas. Nathan is a first-generation Ethiopian-American. And still on the topic of mental health in the wider Black diaspora community or immigrant community, studies show that immigrants are often less likely to access mental health treatment when compared to their Western-born counterparts. And one of the reasons, as Josephine Muthengi earlier explained, is that many of these immigrants come from communities where mental health is not something usually discussed in their families. So to get a better understanding of this, I reached out to Joy Gihana. She's a Rwandan-Canadian family counselor who heads the organization Family Life and Beyond. Her organization provides psychosocial and mental health services, among others, to immigrant families. She agrees that
most immigrants are often hesitant to talk about mental health issues.
So mental health really is a touchy subject, and there is a lot of stigma surrounding the topic. And so it can be very challenging for specifically for immigrants and refugees, because for most countries or from different cultures, again, mental health is a no-go and people barely talk about it. But seeking for help is something that is very voluntary, and so specifically for counseling, you're not going to force anybody to, you know, to access these, you know, these services. But mainly for me, what I've seen work in the past and what I'm trying to implement is to organize or host workshops and seminars that just talk about, you know, mental health, because I do realize that there is a lot of ignorance out there about, you know, what mental health is, and you're also going to, I do also realize that, you know, immigrants will not even talk about emotional difficulties.
Right.
Say, for example, when they go to a doctor's office, they're going to be talking about, you know, physical pain,
right,
like fatigue and stuff like that. So it's, the more we talk about these things and break that stigma, the more people will think or come to believe that it's okay not to be okay, and it is okay to, you know, reach out and ask for help needed.
Does it catch them off guard when you ask them about their non-physical health usually? Because how do you even start broaching this topic with them? Like, you ask them how you're feeling today and what's going on in your mind, or you having stress. How do you start that conversation with them?
So mainly you're going to, of course, when they talk about the physical symptoms, you're going to delve into, okay, what do you think is causing that? So if they're talking about fatigue, you're going to tap into, okay, how do you feel when you're fatigued, or how do you know that you are tired? And then you talk about, you know, some of the symptoms or the research that is out there, that when you're feeling this way or when you experience these physical symptoms, then this may mean this. And you also, I also try to tap into the times when they were doing well. So you ask them, so when you were not feeling this way, how were you feeling, or what made you think that?
Like, what was your mental state at the time when you were not feeling this?
Exactly.
Let me ask you, I know we're running out of time, just real quick, do immigrants have unique mental health challenges, say, from, you know, other people?
Yes, they do, because, again, immigrants and refugees have been through a lot. And I like to divide the immigration process into, like, three phases. So there is the pre-immigration, you know, phase, and the immigration phase itself, and the post-immigration phase. And all these phases will have different, you know, risk factors. So, for instance, like the pre-immigration phase, you're going to find that, which is going to also vary from person to person. If it is, if you're talking to a refugee who was, you know, who has gone through different traumatic experiences, they have faced war and violence, it's going to look different for them, right? And for some asylum seekers, they've been detained along the way, and when we briefly talk about post immigration phase, we are looking at, you know, communication barriers. We are looking at, you know, how employable these people are. We are looking at, you know, a shift in culture. There is, you know, there's culture shock. There is, you know, all these issues that immigrants and refugees face that are not, you know, that are not common to other populations.
That was Joy Gihana, a Ronan Canadian family counselor. She's the founder of the organization Family Life and Beyond, providing psychosocial and mental health services in Canada to immigrant families. And that's it for our show today. Many thanks to our guests and to my co-host Josephine Muthenge in Nairobi, Kenya. We'll catch you again here next time. And I want to leave you with this Yoruba proverb that says, if you damage the character of another, you damage your own. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. You can connect with me on Twitter and on Instagram at Upfront Africa. Till next time, goodbye, Africa. You know what time it is.
go Ghana. Send him single the bankers. Send him get.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall.